You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, our very special guest. Once again, I believe this is your third or fourth time.
Yeah, I think so, at least. Yeah.
Maybe even four, maybe even five. We you're on so often, we lose count. You're one of our main guests. Congressman Peter King. Congressman King is a member of the Homeland Security Committee and chairman of the Subcommittee on Counterterrorism and Intelligence. Representative King is a strong supporter of law enforcement and our military. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Greg, always great to be here, and thank you. And let me, at the outset, just say how much I appreciated the opportunity to be at the graduation ceremony you had out in Brentwood several months ago. It was really a great, great opportunity, and really to see your members and to see the dedication they have and the training they're getting as far as being activists in the union. It was great. It was a great day. And also friendly guys, I got to say, friendly men and women.
Yes, and you also picked up our endorsement out there also.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Now, that was great. You had all these people. You had the endorsement, everybody standing around me. And it means a lot. I think too often Republicans, and we're our own worst enemies in this, somehow we've drawn the line against labor. Now, growing up in New York, in New York politics, Republicans always dealt with labor. Labor always had a seat at the table. At the national level, Republicans, they basically consider labor the enemy, and in return, labor thinks Republicans are the enemy. So I really appreciate having the opportunity to work with your union and with you and with working men and women. And there's no reason why both parties shouldn't compete for the endorsements. And I think it's better for both parties and it's better for the unions. Otherwise, you can be taken for granted by the Democrats. And I'm not saying that critical of the Democrats, but if they know they're going to get the endorsement anyway, why bother?
Well, you couldn't have said it better. And, you know, we look at individuals, and there's some Democrats we don't agree with. There's some Republicans we don't agree with. Mm-hmm. There's some Democrats that are our friends. There's some Republicans that are our friends. And that's the way we look at it. And anybody who thinks Teamsters Local 237 is a one-party union, they're wrong. We have friends on all sides of the aisles in all equations, and we find many allies in the places that you wouldn't expect to find allies. And people are not as open to even listen because they just take for granted, oh, they're Democrats. They're not going to support us. Some of our members are Republicans, too. And we also have to show that side of the membership that we respect their views also. And you do a great job out in Long Island and for the country with counterterrorism and on the Homeland Security Committee. So you are vital to the operation of this country.
Well, thank you. And you know, one of the main things I've been involved in is MS-13, which is a real threat on Long Island, particularly in the Brentwood schools where your members work.
Sure.
And that day, I had an opportunity to talk to several of them, describing what goes on in the school. And they obviously are doing an excellent job, but it's dangerous conditions. I mean, it's in some ways, it was like a war zone. And again, I want to thank your members for the work that they do. And also, again, that day that they were so open talking about what was happening here, what was happening there, what they were doing, the type of help they needed, what they could provide, I just found it very enlightening. But MS-13 is a real critical issue out there, and it hasn't gotten all the attention it deserves, mainly because the victims, and there's been many victims, at one stage, 25 people butchered to death within 18 months. These are young people cut to death with machetes. And it didn't get the attention because basically it happens within the immigrant community.
Yes.
And so long as it's not the regular suburbanite, you know, the white guy or the African-American who's living in a good neighborhood, as long as it's poor immigrants, not that there's any bias, it's just they don't have any spokesmen. And so the average person isn't aware of, like, within 5 miles of my house, kids are being cut to death. So that's why I've been trying to focus on this. And people say it's anti-immigrant, but the ones who are hurt by MS-13 are other immigrants.
No, this is not anti-immigrant. This is anti-violence. This is violence
Absolutely.
We're talking about. No matter who does it, we're not going to excuse that. Our members are security officers in the Brentwood School District.
Right.
And we have the food service workers and we have the custodians in Brentwood.
Mm-hmm.
So all too often we hear these stories and they say how the basketball games turn into gang violence afterwards. And,
right.
You just never would think in a small town in Long Island, a good town in Long Island, that these things would be going on.
Well, there were two young girls, Cuevas and Mickens were their last names, and in Brentwood schools, I guess it was in 2016, in the fall, there was talk that one of them may have been trying to be a boyfriend of some guy, and the girls got back at them. Anyway, these two young girls, both innocent, 14, 15 years old from the Brentwood schools, were coming out of school, were taken aside, and they were hacked to death. Their bodies are mutilated because one girl who was a girlfriend of a guy in MS-13, though one of these girls was winking at him or giving him a look, and so they just had these two girls butchered to death. And that's in the Brentwood School District, where your people are working. I mean, that's the conditions they have to work under.
Yeah, and, you know, I go to the school to visit our members and see the children, and I often think of that story when I'm there, and I say, these poor kids, what conditions they're living in. How can they ever get ahead when they come to school in fear?
Yeah.
Every time they're looking over the shoulder, and tell you the truth, I'm looking over my shoulder when I go there, too, because I'm looking for MS-13.
And what happened was, when a lot of this started, I guess, about 4 years ago, with the when the unaccompanied minors came across the border, which was a tragedy. They were young kids. So they're taken into custody, and then they're released to families who want to take them. And it turns out that many families in Brentwood and Central Islip volunteered to take these kids. What the government didn't realize at the time was that a number of these families were either MS-13 supporters, or they had relatives back in El Salvador who were told would be killed if the families didn't take these kids in. And a number of these kids were MS-13, and they've gone in the schools and they've terrorized other kids. I think in the last murder indictments, I think 7 of the 11 who were indicted were kids who came across 4 years ago as unaccompanied minors. They're like 12, 13, 14 years old, and now they're 15, 16, 17, and they're indicted for these brutal murders. Now, 98%, 99% of those kids that came across were innocent kids, but because we didn't have a good screening system, and because the federal government assigns these kids to the Brentwood School District, or to families, puts them in the Brentwood School District, the school isn't getting any extra money. And so they have to somehow provide for kids who can't speak English, you don't have their full health records, their education is terrible, and some of them are MS-13. All that is dropped on the local school district, which has a tough tax base to begin with, and the government doesn't give the schools any extra money to take care of these kids.
Now, let me ask you, how's that situation now? Have they gotten all the kids, or have they gotten most of the kids? What's the
That's the recent one at the border. Yes. There's still a lot of it not been accounted for. I understand what the president was trying to do, because people were told in Central America that if they walked across the border with a child in their hands, that that they could apply for asylum and they couldn't be sent back if they had the child. And on the other hand, though, the law says that you can't put children in a jail. And so that meant the parents then could stay in the country and they wouldn't go to jail, and they were just, they're told to come back to court in 2 or 3 months. If they don't come back, if you can't find them, then they're here forever. And so this, in many ways, is becoming a gimmick. Coming across the border with a child, they couldn't put the child in jail, and they'd want to put the parent in jail without the child. So this is becoming a real crisis in a way. So the president said that they would go in custody and the children would be taken care of, but they weren't ready for that. They should have had, if they're going to do that, they should have had facilities where you can take care of the parent and the child. It got out of hand, and it really...
That would have taken maybe a month or so to get everything together and have those facilities. Then you can have everybody in one place.
Right, and that's the way it had to be done. I mean, listen, I think we have to try to do what we can to stop illegal immigration. But on the other hand, we also can't be separating families. So until we could find a way to have facilities available for the mother and the child, then they should have not implemented this policy. It was a big mistake that was made. It took them a little too long to catch on to it. Again, I understand what the administration was trying to do, but they implemented it really very, very poorly. And that's, so I'd say there's still a good number have not been returned to the parent. Part of it is tracking the parents down. Some of the parents went back without taking the kids. Others, it could be just, I mean, we see just here in New York City, or any time the government is involved in something, there's something, goes through the cracks. In this case, we have people who don't speak the language, who for the most part don't have great education. They're in a foreign country themselves, and you can see how this can happen. But again, there's really no excuse. Bottom line is, we have an obligation to take care of kids. Adults, sometimes can be on their own. And you figure if they got themselves into something, well, that's their problem. But in this case, it shouldn't be taken out on the kids.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President Local 237 Teamsters. With me, our very special guest is Congressman Peter King. And we are here talking about national security at the moment, our borders. And how are the, I would say, Suffolk County Police Department handling the MS-13 these days? Have they somewhat got that situation under control, or is it still a vital threat to the community?
It's still a threat to the community, but the Suffolk County Police, and now working with the Nassau County Police, there's a new commissioner in Nassau County, Pat Ryder, who is very much on this. The new commissioner in Suffolk County, Jerry Hart, she was head of the FBI in Suffolk when they started going after MS-13. And the former police commissioner, who was very good, Tim Sini, is now the district attorney. So you have all the people in place. Yeah. And the fact that the president has gotten involved in it, there's been more money gone in as far as police technology and equipment. There's more prosecutors have been sent in from the Justice Department. And Homeland Security and the FBI and the local police are working together great. This too often with police, my father was a cop for many years, but you have the split between the local police and the FBI or the state police, and the everybody's working together, and they really are. And right now, there were 25 murders in 18 months. That violence level, I'm not aware of any recent murders at all by MS-13 in Suffolk County. Now, they're there, and they're dangerous, but they're really going after them. And they've been very aggressive in catching them, deporting them, imprisoning them. Government is, with the federal government, they can put very large, very long prison sentences on these people. And again, what's interesting, though, is when you see them, they look like they're 15, 16-year-old kids. They may be 5'3", 115 pounds. You wouldn't believe that they'd be capable of this type of violence. But talking to the people on the ground, talking to some of your people who work in the schools, the situation has improved, but we can't let our guard down because these are evil, vicious people.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. You can't let them up.
No, all gangs are bad, but somehow you can almost understand the rationale for other gangs. There's money in it, there's women in it, there's a good lifestyle. It's wrong, it's evil, but at least there's a motive. MS-13, there's no motive at all, just to kill people. They don't get anything out of it. There's no money, there's nothing.
Violence.
Yeah.
Unhinged violence.
Yeah.
There's also the sheriff's department out in Suffolk County. I know the sheriff, Errol Toulon Jr. Matter of fact, our families go back to 1975. His cousin, his first cousin, and I played on the same Little League baseball team when we were 12. So we go way back, and we found our paths when he was running for Suffolk County Sheriff.
I didn't know him at all. Yeah. He's a Democrat. I endorsed the Republican and campaigned for the Republican running against him. I was disappointed on election night when Errol won the election, and then we went out to meet him. He is the greatest guy. I mean, he is so independent. I wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of him. He's really very dedicated, very focused, a great guy to meet with and talk with. His record is phenomenal out there, and he is really first class. And there's no politics, there's no
BS.
He's all straight.
He's straight as an arrow. He is right down the middle.
His father was in law enforcement too.
His father was in corrections.
Yeah.
His father and my father-in-law work together in corrections.
Oh wow, okay, you do go back.
Oh yeah, so I met my father-in-law through my wife. We found out that we knew the Toulons, his Errol, and then his brother Cecil.
Okay.
And Cecil is the father of the two that I knew from playing baseball.
Wow.
So all of those years came back. And my father always said, be careful of who you meet and how you treat people. You never know when it comes back around. So here in my adult life, that going back from 12 years old to now, I met the Toulons again.
I'm beginning to think you're connected to everyone. When the day I was out at the graduation,
I'm Forrest Gump.
I had a detective with me, and I just casually introduced you to him. Next thing I know, the two of you talking about all these basketball players you know and all these guys that you grew up with, and you're connected to everyone.
And would you believe he also knows somebody else that I know from the barbershop? The guy told me he's going to an event for you,
right.
Reggie, and he's an actor. So Reggie told me he was going to see you. I said, Congressman King, we know each other very well. And then he mentioned the detective, and I said, yes.
Man, yeah, wow.
And And I didn't know he knew the detective, but I said Sutherland from Syracuse was the connection because he always went to the Syracuse game.
That was one of Dan's best friends. His son played for Syracuse. Yes. I think he's playing European basketball.
He's playing Europe. Yeah, he was playing for Boeheim's Army.
Okay.
So they lost in that basketball tournament. So he's playing overseas, I believe.
Okay. Wow, small world.
James Sutherland. That's
you watch. I don't know how guys get away with leading double lives because somehow you're going to get caught up sooner or later. Just people that intermingle.
You just never know. So that's why I said you get you got to be just very quiet and always look at the quiet guy who's quiet because he's hiding something. So there's a reason. Quiet guys are quiet. They don't talk. They don't brag. So listen, we spoke about bipartisanship support for labor. Is there anything on the horizon that you think we could partner with labor and Congress?
Well, a big one now, which I guess it's not affect your members, but certain pension, it seems the pension funds are really in trouble.
Yes.
For no fault of the members. I mean, part of it's economic driven and just the way it's happening. Chuck Schumer and I are working in a bipartisan way to try and get legislation to protect really innocent people who are in these pension systems. I know there's different locals on Long Island. There's a number in Wisconsin also where the Speaker of the House is from who really their benefits are either going to be lost altogether or cut dramatically.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find a way. And basically, I don't have all the details in front of me, but have government bonds go out so it shouldn't cost the government any money and use that to finance a way to subsidize or help out these people who are innocent victims. They put their time in. They worked. They, as far as they knew, they retire and they have a pension. And now the pension's been cut in half, cut by two-thirds. So that's something which, to me, both Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, and progressives can work together on. Chuck and I, we don't agree on a lot of issues. We agree on most things involving New York. But on this is just basic justice. It shouldn't even be a labor management issue. I mean, it's labor, did what they had to do, and the pension funds are in trouble. But this is not a case of money being abused or misused or anything else. It's just economic conditions that are causing it to collapse. And so we have to work on that. Also, I think the key area where there could be bipartisanship, and this is where I wish the president had started off on this, rather than going to health care, which is so controversial, and where people have such strong feelings, it was hard to even work a compromise on it, if they had started with infrastructure.
I knew you were going to say that.
And if we could have done that, and let's say the Republicans, we have the White House, we have the House. In the Senate, the Democrats have sort of a veto power. You put Chuck Schumer and President Trump in the room, and whatever agreement would come out with, maybe 60-40 Republicans to Democrats as far as projects, but the American people would win. You put these projects, roads, bridges, tunnels, we have a decaying infrastructure. That would have provided jobs, and it also would have started things off in a bipartisan way. Because if they sit in a room for 2-3 months, work out a deal which helps everybody, that just creates a whole new climate to work in. So then maybe you could have gone to something like healthcare, because I think there are real problems with Obamacare. On the other hand, it helped a lot of people. Try to find out the areas that worked, like Medicaid expansion here in New York worked, preconditions worked. On the other hand, other people had their premiums go sky high. Find a way to keep the good parts, address the parts that didn't work, but instead we got locked in, and that really set a tone which, people were expecting a fight anyway. If we could have just not had that major fight up front, I think there'd be a lot more. Listen, there's always going to be good fights in politics. I have no problem with that. We fight over everything now. Right, it's ridiculous. Right, right.
But this is the second administration in a row that should have led with infrastructure. This conversation could have been had 8 years ago with President Obama. We were screaming for infrastructure. Mm. Sent them a whole package on infrastructure. Did the same thing to the current president, Donald Trump. We had a forum. Infrastructure provides jobs. Not only does it provide construction jobs, but people need food, people need equipment, people need materials, and then businesses spawn on the side of the roads of those projects, and this is ongoing. When Eisenhower built the interstate highways, look how he revolutionized the country. You could now go from New York to California through an interstate highway. So here in New York, and I don't want to talk partisan politics,
no.
But the governor had several infrastructure projects. He rebuilt bridges, at least 5 or 6 different bridges.
Right.
And now the tunnels. Right. He redid the tunnels. I think that's a massive, massive accomplishment on a small scale. We could have did this nationally.
I agree with you completely, and everyone benefits. And again, I don't have the exact formulas. You get different type formulas.
Sure.
But for every dollar that's spent, how that doubles and triples itself
it
as it goes out.
Yeah.
So you have the initial expense, but then you get so much more back in revenue, jobs being created.
The return is great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that they could have come to the public pension funds that are investing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We invest in infrastructure. We invest in private equity.
Mm-hmm.
Why not invest in America? If you come up with a plan that has a return, some of the pension funds, and there was trillions of dollars in public pension funds, can invest in some of these projects. It's like investing in yourself. And the value will come back and the investment return will come back. So I said, you know, if you know, you don't have to always go to the government to get money. There's private partner partnerships.
Right.
Some of the public pension funds can invest in infrastructure. And the return would come back to the fund, and also it would go back to the American people.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree completely. And that, you know, looking at it now in hindsight, Republicans got caught up in this thing that everybody was against Obamacare. Yeah, the people who didn't like it were doing a lot of yelling, but there's also people who were benefiting from it.
Had the fund,
and other people who didn't realize they're benefiting from it until they suddenly thought they may lose it. And so we ended up where there was no chance to make any movement at all.
Yes.
And I still think. There should be corrections made to Obamacare, but it's there. And we have to accept that and find ways to work within it or change it, but don't be taking benefits away that people have now gotten.
Tear it down, rebuild it, call it whatever you want to call it, but people need health care.
Yeah.
And you know, we could have attached health care to the construction jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You could have said, okay, in order for a company to bid on this, you have to provide health care to your employees. And therefore, you get two for one. You get health care and you get the infrastructure going. And then you say, you know what? Now we could come up with a program. The employers, like take Amazon, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I hear Amazon, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, but they don't provide benefits for their employees. So that means those employees are going on public assistance. So the government is subsidizing their wealth.
Wow.
That shouldn't be. Amazon's making money. They should pay for their employees. They should pay wages enough for the employees to live, that the employees aren't on food stamps or government assistance for health care. So the government shouldn't be subsidizing Amazon's profits.
Yeah, and again, this is all the things that could have been discussed at a table. And maybe it's because you and I are biased New Yorkers, but to me, you put a sharp guy like Schumer in the room with Donald Trump, who will tell you he's the sharpest guy in the world. And Chuck thinks he's the sharpest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You put them in there. And also coming out of New York, you know, we're used to dealing with everyone. Whether you like people, don't like them, whether your race, religion, nationality, labor, management, whatever, everybody gets thrown together and we make it work. And I think they could have made it work.
Yeah, things are really different. And people think you're in New York and you're in this bubble. But let's take a street, Francis Lewis Boulevard in Queens. Now, you could travel north to south, Francis Lewis Boulevard, and you could go through the whole world. What I mean by that is everybody in the world lives on that street.
Right.
It turns, it curves, it goes from North Queens to South Queens. But you would, if you took a drive or you walked and took a trip, you would meet every nationality along the way, right on that street. There's been stories done on Francis Lewis Boulevard.
The reason I'm smiling is I lived a half a block off Francis Lewis Boulevard. I lived on 112th Avenue between 25th and Francis Lewis. I was maybe 150 feet off Francis Lewis.
Really? That's the Hollis St.
Albans? Just south of Hollis, about three blocks south of Hollis Avenue. And I was half a block west of Francis Lewis.
No kidding. I grew up around there also, but I grew up in Queens Village, further south toward Belmont Racetrack.
Okay.
Yes. So, we have 30 seconds. The last thought.
Time went fast.
It does. It does go fast. Any last thoughts before we have to end the program?
First of all, there's no reason why people who have strong ideas can't get in the arena and fight it out. But in the end, we got to find a way to make America work. And I say the same thing with labor and management. It's important that they work together. And it's important, I'm saying this to my fellow Republicans, that we find ways to stand with labor when they're right. We can have honest differences when we think they're wrong. But the fact is that they have to come to the table. I want to thank you and your members, Local 237, for the great job that you do day in and day out.
Thank you, Congressman King, and thank you for being our champion.
Thank you.
This is Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. You were listening to Congressman King on Reaching Out.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.